Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes, Caught Offside, just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm not going to lie, I'm distracted. I'm distracted this morning by breaking news. OJ Simpson has died.
Yeah.
He died as I was doing my final prep for the podcast, and it threw me. Completely threw me.
Did we know he was sick?
No, I did not know that.
Okay, yeah, I don't think I did either.
Every now and again, I would go on his Twitter, which was this remarkable thing where he decided to have a Twitter account and thought, again, like he's everything he's done since 1994, he's thought, I can just go and be normal and talk about my day's golf or mostly about college football or the NFL. Like he will, hey, Twitter world, it's yours truly. Like, no, you can't be that bright and breezy.
Yeah.
Those that you can't.
No, it's like, over for you as a part of society.
Well, what are you doing? But he used to, you know, and I used to, it was a macabre thing that I would go over and I would just every now and again, because yeah, it's one of those things, like I couldn't get my head around this breezy attitude. Still obviously getting his NFL pension and talking about a round of golf he did or the NFL weekend past. And that was the only check-in I would really do on him. Apart from every year since Ezra Edelman released OJ Made in America, the best 30 for 30 that's ever been done by anyone. I watched that full six-parter, the 6.5, 7 hours, whatever it is. I watched that every year at some point, all the way through. Like, yeah. It's the most fascinating look at modern America. Forget OJ Simpson. The background on Los Angeles, Watts, race in America, celebrity in America, everything is there in that film. It's the intersection of sports and real life. It's the ultimate rebuke to those who say, well, you know, sports and politics, sports and everything else. No, I'm sorry. They are a part of the society and the societal buildup we have. And I watch it every single year. And Darcy will come in and, oh, it's that time of year.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I've known you for a long time. I don't know that I knew you had this fascination with OJ.
Utterly, utterly fascinated, because my parents, so you can't understand how my father would have no clue about the gridiron. He knew NFL existed. He did not understand it. He didn't watch it down. He never, like, just, it'd be too slow, too stop start for him. And it wasn't really on TV in the 90s, apart from Channel 4. But through 1995, my father and my mother had a ritual where they would sit down, and I think it was, weirdly, BBC Two would do the day's highlights live from Los Angeles of the trial. And my father and mother would sit down at the end of the day, like, and this was like 10:30, 11 o'clock, you know, and they would watch. So I'm like 12, 13 at the time. And so, like, you know, I go to bed whenever, it's like fine. Wow. And so I would see them. They would eat cream crackers and eat yogurts before bed and watch. And I remember my father remarking in the way that only a West of Ireland man can. No explanation needed. That Jojito, he's no doll. Meaning he's not stupid. So they watched every bit of it. So, like,
very in-depth commentary.
I mean, like, but like, he meant they never watched The Naked Gun. They didn't do anything.
No, it's interesting that there was, and I knew that there was global reach with this, but it is interesting that existed
in a time before like everyone had internet access, like 5-6 years before people in the West of Ireland had anything, had dial up even.
And the reach of the NFL at that time, like now it's much greater. They're playing games in London, in Germany, sure. Brazil this year.
That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
There was a global interest to a story that felt very American.
Oh, absolutely.
It's interesting.
I mean, Ricky Gervais has always said, America makes things famous. And there's such a truth to that. You know, that's why, like, every band, they were good, but they never broke America. You know, we have this like blueprint of how things look, and if things are famous in America, they're famous generally everywhere. Now, there's some things in the minutiae of American
not
culture.
Derek Jeter, as I came to find out from your brother.
No, who's
never
Jeter?
Heard of him?
Yeah. Who's Jeter? His first
never
game.
Heard of him.
By the way, his first game in baseball was I took him to Red Sox Yankees at Yankee Stadium. My God, oh, a brilliant game, 3-2, so much fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So, it's just, it's a fascinating piece of American culture. And, the rewatch begins this weekend.
I was going to say, I think I know what you'll be doing tonight. Part one, bang.
Yep. No, seriously. Yeah. And part one's very, very good because it does give background, you know, the background to the police and black lives in Los Angeles in the 50s and the 60s and 70s when OJ was coming up as a youngster. So it's.
Well, while you're doing that, I probably will be YouTubing some Norm MacDonald.
Another fine way to spend your time. That is, I mean,
that rabbit hole might be as long as the Ezra Edelman 30 for 30 series. I could be stuck in the Norm MacDonald rabbit hole for weeks.
A total genius the man was. And for you, at least, when Norm MacDonald passed away, you straight away sent me his weekend report OJ comments.
I mean, it's endless, and it had a hand in getting him fired from SNL. He was asked to, I think, tone it down on the OJ jokes, and he ratcheted up to another. He took it even to a higher level. It's
crazy to think that people are more PC now than they were then. Like, there's people who like go, oh, the 90s, you could go on TV and say what you want. You couldn't. You never could. And Norm MacDonald is living proof of that.
Yeah, although I don't know if it was because the jokes were uncomfortable for the public. I think it had something to do maybe with the leadership at NBC that had a relationship with OJ.
That's right. Yeah.
I think it had more to do with that rather than like, this isn't palatable. This is inappropriate. I don't think it was about the appropriateness. I think it was.
He was strutting up and down the sideline in those Bruno Malleys for NBC. And in the civil trial that came up, his NBC coverage where he goes, I wouldn't wear those ugly ass shoes in his deposition. And the next thing there, they have him on TV wearing those ugly ass shoes, a unique pair of ugly ass shoes. Whose prints were found at the murder scene.
Yeah. Well. So O.J. Simpson. There you go.
rest in peace.
Yeah.
Jesus.
What a show. what a show we have coming up for you. This, I mean, JJ, I could only think of one. I could only really think of one thing as this Champions League round, this, these first legs were playing out, because we've been complaining like little babies, little entitled brats. We've been complaining, oh, this isn't entertaining enough for us, you know, like, for over a year now. Well, you know what? We got our entertainment. I kept thinking of the line from Russell Crowe in Gladiator.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
And yes, I was entertained. We had drama. We had goals. What does it say? I mean, and look, I know it's only the first leg. So the real drama, it's hard for the drama to be at full maximum capacity in a first leg when nobody's been eliminated yet. But this was about as close as you can get in a first leg. What does it say about a set of first leg fixtures in the quarterfinal stage where the least exciting one was the one decided by one goal where the crossbar was hit twice in the last 8 minutes of the game? Like, that was the least exciting.
Imagine. I mean, and there was so much in you refer to Atleti Dortmund.
Yeah.
There was so much in that one as well to comment on. But yet that was the least exciting game. What does it say about a quarterfinal between I call them pass masters, Man City, and pass masters Real Madrid, when the XG was 6 goals were scored from only 1.58 XG.
It's one of my favorite statistics. I have it noted here. It's one of my favorite statistics of all time. I mean, because it tells you that these were goals of unusual quality that were scored in that game, at least certainly on the Manchester City side.
JJ Bull said it, long-range shots are back, baby. I feel like those kind of taking those shots was way more common like 25 years ago.
Yeah, there's that, especially with Manchester City. I mean, that's like the classic Pep goal is what, like kind of played out wide, somebody passes into the middle and it's just kind of dinked into the net from,
as you said,
out.
Bing, bong, bing, bong.
Yeah, you know, that was always Barcelona. I mean, look, they score lots of different kinds of goals, but that was kind of what I thought of under Barcelona. I mean, while we're talking about it, I had Arsenal, Bayern Munich first, but we're into Real Madrid, Manchester City. Should we just keep going?
I mean, let's go with that one. So, I may on Tuesday, excuse me, I decided that I would watch this one over Arsenal, Bayern Munich, because I thought you'd have that one covered. We don't usually divvy up. It's however we watch the games, and we come and talk about them. So we don't usually divvy it up, but I just, for this Tuesday, I did do that. And I'm kind of glad I did. because you know, it's funny. I am so much more, Manchester City, if it's Brentford on a Saturday, I'm not watching it. Like, I'll go for a walk. I won't watch it. But like in the Champions League, and particularly this matchup against Real Madrid, I find it fascinating. I do find them like terribly interesting games. Last year was interesting from a kind of an annihilation standpoint. The year before was interesting from a kind of a comeback from the dead, Lazarus style stuff from Real Madrid. But yeah, this was a very, very good game right from the get-go.
And this is, I mean, like, this is what the Champions League is supposed to be about, essentially. The Bernabeu, defending champs against all-time champs, back and forth, lots of goals. Like, this is kind of what you're hoping. You know, I think these are the two, it remains to be seen, I guess, but I believe these are the two best teams in the world right now. Liverpool and Arsenal they certainly have a case to be made. Bayer Leverkusen, I guess, although it's a little hard for them, I think, to wear that crown if they're not in this competition. Yeah. Fair or not, it's just hard. I know if they go unbeaten, then we can talk about it. But I will say Man City and Real Madrid for me, and I'm willing to fight people who disagree on that.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fair enough.
But what an absurd start to this game. 3 goals in the first 14 minutes. The Bernardo Silva free kick.
Let's talk about that.
Look, there are some goalkeeping questions, certainly, as Lunin was there. I mean, he had a hand on it. But I just love, I don't know, there's a certain level of, like, freedom for a player to be able to do that. I don't know if that's how it was drawn up, but clearly Bernardo Silva, did Pep say afterwards, yeah, this was the plan all along? Because I took it as Bernardo Silva saw something and just kind of went for it and is good enough to execute it.
I think on those free kicks, I'd love to know how didactic and rigid Pep is on that, because that seemed to me Bernardo Silva read the situation. He sees, because it's not on if Lunin is a yard over to the right,
right,
to Bernardo's left. It's not on. So I think he just read the situation. There was two people over the free kick. There was a real option for him to just go for it. There was the space there. He's caught it perfectly. Like even if, like that's on target and making the keeper force a save, even if Lunin knows it's going that side. And he almost does save it, but I'd like my goalkeeper to be a bit more Johnny on the spot with that one, but I can't fault the skill of it. It was so good. And the game is off to the absolute, you're straight away put in the mindset, oh my God, is this going to be like last year? Are they going to absolutely batter Madrid? Are we going to come away with all these questions? But Madrid are better now, I think, since it wasn't his greatest game, but certainly since the addition of Jude Bellingham. Just the general Madrid vibe, I think, is even better than it was last season, where they looked, at the end of that City game, they looked like a completely beaten docket, as did every other team in Europe in the wake of City. And so you thought City, oh God, are City going to kick on? But no.
No, there's a reason Real Madrid haven't lost at home in just over a year, which is crazy. They don't rattle easily. They have a belief in that place. And sure enough, I mean, we were 14 minutes in, three goals had been scored, the first by Man City, and the next two, Real Madrid came right back and got two of their own in response. The Camavinga goal, I mean, it's a great job by him to free up space to be able to get that shot off. He's such a great player. I love watching that guy play. But, I mean, he benefits
from a
huge deflection. In fact, it did go down as an own goal. No, I think it went down as a Ruben Diaz own goal. That was a big part of it. They got, it was fortuitous. And then right after that, Real Madrid keep the pressure on. They keep momentum moving forward. Comes to Rodrigo, who sometimes is maybe a little bit unfairly lost in the shuffle of Vinicius and Bellingham, but he's such a great player himself. And I still don't know exactly what happened at the end of this goal. The ball, I mean, look, the ball winds up in the net and it trickles across the line in doing so. I know Guy Mowbray said on the broadcast that Akanji deflected it.
Slightly.
I guess so. It was hard to see that.
But I think Rodrigo is trying to do the double nutmeg. He's trying to put it low under the keeper and under Akanji, and he succeeds in doing so, and it rolls slowly into the net. It's a great goal. I just want to go back a little bit, though. The point being about Kyle Walker not being on the field is worth noting. Mm-hmm. Like, Kyle Walker's recovery speed there means that is not racing in on goal. And we saw Crystal Palace target the right-hand side go down the left, their left of City's defense on Saturday against Palace. And, you know, when Palace had that purple patch where City looked like they were panicking a bit, there was balls going in there and it was Gvardiol was on that side. But this time it was Akanji, and I mean, he's just not getting, he's away to the races. There's too much green grass in behind. And away Rodrigo goes. It's funny. City did well, I think, afterwards to not allow that happen again. It didn't really happen again. But I'm going to give Rodrigo the credit, Andrew. I think he genuinely tried to do the double nutmeg.
It's a really cool goal, and I love that guy as a player. They're all fun to watch. Real Madrid, I've talked about it. I love watching them play.
Yeah, no, you have Franco's Real Madrid. Close to your heart. Come on.
But then, you know, to Manchester City's credit, they also, I mean, I guess they rattled a little bit to allow two goals in such quick succession, but they gathered themselves, and then it was their turn to respond. Phil Foden. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just the most, he's been good for a few years, but this is transcendent. He's found another level. He's reached a certain level of player in the world right now. And it's another amazing goal from him outside of the box. What a finish. He's just spectacular. His form in the Premier League has him maybe at the top of the heap from a player of the season perspective. And he's carried that over into this competition as well.
I'll first speak to the Fodenness, and then I'm going to raise an old chestnut between me and you, Andy. And I think you'll agree with me, though. Okay. And it kind of bleeds into the Gvardiol goal as well. Oh. So I'll go with Foden first of all. If you're watching that game, and you're an English supporter that went through the tough periods of Hodgson, where you had an aging Steven Gerrard in center midfield, and you're trying, you had Gareth Barry in 2010 as well, just guys that didn't fit. And, oh, hey, Joe Cole is fit. Maybe he can come in. He's a technician. And now you have a midfield conundrum for England. You have Bellingham on one side and you have Foden on the other. And Thierry Henry was asked, well, can you fit both in? And he was like, yeah, of course. Now, he didn't really stop to think very much about what Gareth Southgate wants to do. So he did the classic commentator or analyst thing where he hasn't had time to think about the question. And he goes, well, far be it from me to tell Gareth what to do. Southgate's got genuine headaches here. Like, does he play a kind of a double pivot? Does he play Rice? He's kind of got to play Rice after the season he's had. There's no way he can leave Bellingham out. So that's two in the midfield there. Right. And what does it like? How does he do things up front? Does it like he's got to play Foden as well? Like, for me,
what's the problem?
Well, I suppose the problem
I fail to see the problem here as we continue to list some of the world's greatest players.
Yeah, right. The problem could be where along that front line he plays Foden. And also, is that a kind of, how would I say, a concession to their club form rather than sticking with a more conservative approach with England? But that, it's just something to ponder. I mean, no Englishman, no in 2010, no 2012 period, I don't think there was an English supporter that could have dreamt they'd have players at the height. Like Foden, you can argue, is now the best player at Manchester City. Kevin De Bruyne still is, but we'll say we're in a kind of...
I mean,
of
right
a,
now, in this, say, at this moment,
no, but
Foden is the best player on that team right now, today.
You want to say that?
Okay, right now.
Yeah, fine.
I mean, I'm not talking about over the course of... Yeah, over the last 5 years, it's De Bruyne. Last year, it was probably Haaland. Right now, season, it's this guy. It's Foden.
Fine. And Bellingham, the best player at Real Madrid. So the two best, like, as you said,
That's tough between him and Vinicius.
Okay, well...
But all right, fine.
All I'm saying, we don't have to argue the point. All I'm saying is you can make that statement and people won't look askance at you. And that's craziness. Now to the goal itself. And this will slide us into the Gvardiol goal.
Well, wait, just to put a bow on this thing that you're talking about now. So what are you suggesting the issue is? That there's a lot of pressure on Southgate to make this work because the level of player is so great. If he squanders it, you're fired. And your reputation
he's done anyway. We're at the end of the Southgate cycle. We're at the end of the waistcoat. The waistcoat is the threads are pulling on that waistcoat. And
if
he's
they win the Euros, you don't think he'll want to see him into one more World Cup?
No, he won't. He definitely won't. And they're not winning the Euros.
Wow,
they're not winning the Euros. He kept saying.
Oh, you're just speaking it into existence. You don't actually necessarily believe that. I see.
They can win the Euros.
They absolutely
can.
And
that's the problem. But what I'm saying is, just put yourself in the mindset of an English supporter. You have unbelievable expectations that a little over a decade ago you couldn't have seen coming. I really don't think you could have. So the goals themselves. I absolutely, on the first one, I hate both Camavinga and I hate Cruz. Or maybe I hate a centre-back too. But I'll excuse the centre-backs because the last thing you want to do is come rushing out and then leave a gap for someone to... against City to bink a ball in behind you. But I hate that they don't close down quicker. I hate that they give him that pocket of space. I think this may be a casualty of the thinking, well, he's got it all to do from that range. He's not going to score or whatever. But it's an exceptional strike. He's an exceptional player. I want closing down there, like serious quick closing down. And on the second one, I have absolutely no qualms about what I'm about to say. Gvardiol's first touch is so heavy that a quicker, more nimble, younger Kroos is out there and maybe even wins the ball standing up. He wouldn't have to go to ground. What he ends up doing is nothing. Nothing. You can't just turn your arse like that. A half turn. That touch is so bad, you got to be on your tippy toes and get out and clear. And he doesn't. Great shot, brilliant shot by Gvardiol. He probably couldn't believe that that's how he scores his opening goal for Manchester City.
Yeah, and I wonder if Kroos couldn't believe that Gvardiol would even take that shot. Like, I wonder if that's part of...
Don't be a hostage to fortune. Get out there, close it down. That's just the way I feel about that one. And those goals, it's I don't know, it's amazing the way my brain is wired. Appreciate the strikes 100%. Can't watch the defending on them. Cannot.
Three goals for Manchester City on an XG of 0.88, according to XG philosophy.
Do you think Pep went home Pep goes home, right? By the way, you seen the $1 million watch he was wearing?
No. Is it literally $1 million?
$1 million worth of a specially made watch. There's only X amount of them in the world. One of the big tennis players wears one. He was spotted with it on the sideline. Do you think he goes home like Giancarlo Esposito in Breaking Bad? So he goes back. He's very neat. He takes off all his clothes, folds them, puts them down, puts the watch on top, and goes to the toilet and vomits, just retches after watching that. Like, that was just like, it's just not him.
I'm trying.
And he was staggered. He was staggered after the game. I genuinely felt, you know, he goes, oh, so, so good. So, so good. Amazing. But he seemed genuinely just shocked by what he'd seen.
It was extraordinary. I mean, three unbelievable goals. I'm trying to think now about the pressure of wearing a $1 million watch just out and about. Like, when I get a new pair of $40 sneakers, I'm examining every step that I take.
So you don't scuff them up.
So as to avoid every puddle or patch of dirt. Like, imagine the pressure of a $1 million watch on your wrist.
So Marca, of course. Marca have lobbed, they've lobbed a bit more on it. Pep Guardiola dons exclusive watch worth $1.4 million for Champions League tie versus Real Madrid. So it must be £1 million sterling. The Manchester City coach showcased his expensive piece on the touchline. I mean, he's looking very dapper. He's got the high neck thing. He's got a nice jacket. Richard Mille. You know Richard? I doubt you bite from Richard Mille very much. $1 million.
Yeah,
only 50 units were produced worldwide, and Guardiola, one of the highest paid soccer coaches in the world, is one of the few known owners. So I wonder, do they give him that as promo?
Maybe. Oh, wow. What a gift.
Me and you, straight on eBay. Huh?
Good for him. Yeah, let's get in touch with them, see what we can arrange, if we can get some kind
imagine
of deal.
Imagine sponsorship. Well, I mean, we have an exclusive listenership. So it's the Richard Mille 27-01. A masterpiece in watchmaking, as its makers claim. It is built to withstand acceleration exceeding 5,000 Gs. Well,
is that necessary?
No, not at all. Watch was put on sale for $860,000, but over time it has almost doubled in value. Enough of this horology.
Yeah. So there, now Man City are in front. It's 3-2, but the goals were not done. The great goals were not finished. As Fede Valverde...
What one do you think gave me the biggest horn?
Let's see. Knowing you, you know, you're a little different. You like to be different. You kind of like to march to the beat of your own drum. I'm going to say the massive Camavinga deflection.
No, Valverde. Yeah. Oh!
For me, it's probably the Guardiola one. Gave me real Jermaine Jones vibes from the 2014 World Cup.
Falling over defender buries one. That's you.
Oh, but it was just so stunning. Like, yes. It was just perfect too. Like the shot, I don't know, something about that one. But the Valverde finish was also fantastic.
I loved it. Oh God, I loved it. And it's a pick out from Vinicius on the left hand side. You know. Like, there was a suggestion in commentary, is that just like a fluffed cross? Like, he's trying to clip that in. But I think he spots Valverde and he catches it so perfect. If we're making a, ooh, hasn't he caught that perfectly, top three players in football right now, I would have Valverde, Alexis McAllister, who else?
Oh, for me, Calhanoglu from Inter.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely in that list for me.
I'm wondering, and in the oh God, he scuffed that top of the list, Andy Robertson.
Yeah, where's Moussa Sissoko? He was kind of was one of those.
Yeah.
And so it's 3-3, and that is how it winds up finishing. Just a fantastic game. I wanted to ask you about this. Kind of a random question, but
no.
Well, I'm just wondering about Manchester City. So. Like, Foden last week, hat trick, doesn't play in the next game. De Bruyne does play in that game. Two goals and an assist. Then he doesn't play in this game. And that's a hard thing. I know De Bruyne has battled injuries, and so maybe, you know, fitness is a question and all that. But it's Boy, that's a hard thing for me to wrap my mind around, that Kevin De Bruyne isn't starting a game for Manchester City in the Champions League quarterfinals against Real Madrid. And I'm just wondering about that. Like, what is that? What is Pep's preferred 11? Is there a reason that De Bruyne wouldn't be starting this game? Is he trying to just balance this thing to fight on both fronts? Or is that strategic, Kovacic is more suited for this? And when has Kevin De Bruyne ever not been suited, no matter what, to play in a game? I was a little taken aback by that.
Yeah, I mean, they're a different type of player, obviously, and totally different qualities. I think it's the first thing. I think he's trying to keep everything balanced, keep everything fresh. De Bruyne is 32 now, man.
I know.
And I do think that Pep wants all his pieces available going down the line. I mean, if you think about it, though, we were worried about them losing Gundogan, and maybe there's a sense that that Guardiola acknowledges they are just that one midfielder short to what they were last season. They're that little bit different, and that he wants to keep it. I think he wants to keep it fresh. I think it's that simple. And so far, so good. I mean, it was the Kevin De Bruyne show at the weekend. If he wants to win on two fronts, I actually think there's a sense, not a sense, there's Guardiola wants to win another European Cup and another Premier League in the same season. And then I think he'll start looking about where he goes next. He may not be able to go anywhere because of the constraints of money, but I do think that he wants to do that again at City. The inevitability of last season, I think, is clear in his mind. And I think if he does it twice, there's an immortality from that.
Oh my goodness. Do you feel, I know that is the word that we have applied to this entire era of Manchester City, inevitable. Yeah. Do you feel that this year? Do you still?
I feel there used to be a noise on the Terminator films, like a horn, you know, sounding in the distance when a T-1000 was coming after you. And I hear that clarion now.
Okay. For me, that's more of like Omar coming from The Wire as he's like whistling, coming around the corner.
Omar coming. Yeah, City coming.
That inevitability, I don't know that it's, look, I still think the world of them as a team, but I don't know that it's just like a given right now.
Nothing's a given.
Well, we thought it kind of was last
year. Tomorrow's not a given for any of us.
I understand that.
Like, and soccer.
You're saying this? You've said this about them for a generation.
I do feel the inevitability, the soccer inevitability. If you watch them at the weekend, how they bounce back from what was a game that was going away from them. Now, again, you're relying on Jordan or Andre Ayew or whoever to score.
It's Palace.
But they looked rattled and then they found a way. And this game was obviously crazy. It's not as inevitable as last season, but we have seen this story before. And what game are we going to next, by the way? Just tell me.
Arsenal-Bayern.
So, if you watched Arsenal's shaky performance against Bayern and some of the things that happened there defensively and with David Raya, you look at it and you think, who's going to slip up in this title race coming down the stretch? Just to go to the Premier League for 1 second. It's probably Arsenal might do it again. Liverpool might do it again. City won't do it again. That's what it's just the overall feeling. It's just a feeling. I could be wrong.
And like we said, City do... By the statistics, they have what is considered to be the easiest fixture list remaining in the Premier League, so that could have something to do with it as well. Going back for the second leg of that, just the fact that it's tied and it's going back to the Etihad and away goals actually would have really helped Manchester City. I think you do give the edge to City, but it's Real Madrid and it's the Champions League, so it's worth watching, that's for damn sure. Let's go to the game we were also just mentioning, Arsenal and Bayern Munich. What a game. Now, there's a lot to discuss here. Oftentimes, we'll go in sequential order of like how things actually transpired over the course of the game. But I'm going to kind of throw that out a little bit. I'm going to go to sort of, let's just go to the controversy, because there were a couple controversies in this one that I don't want to say overshadow it. It was a phenomenal game. It was such a fun watch. But there's a couple controversies here that I'm just so curious for your thoughts on. And let's start with the big one, because I don't know that I've quite, certainly on this kind of stage, I don't think I've seen one quite like this before. I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, it means you're a soccer fan. And if you're a soccer fan, you've probably by now seen the incident where David Raya is getting ready to take a goal kick. The referee blows his whistle. Raya passes the ball to Gabriel, who then picks up the ball and puts it down and passes it back to Raya. Kane went nuts. Who else? There were a few Bayern players went crazy. Tuchel really went crazy after the match because no penalty was given, and the referee told him to play on. And so, so on we went. And we came to find out afterwards that there was no real reason that no penalty was given there. Like, there's no caveat. There's no other rule that we weren't aware of. We all saw what happened, and the referee just kind of made his own decision there of,
yeah, which can happen.
Nah.
Yeah, he's like, no, that's not Dave.
I don't feel like it.
No, he looked at it and he said, which again.
He called it a kid's mistake.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like an error where you go, oh no, take that again. And if you've played.
This isn't a pickup game.
If you've played at any level, the referees do have that kind of discretion to say, all right, take that again. Do that again. They can do that. And it does happen. Now, let me go back to my childhood, way back to my childhood, watching Norwich in Europe. Norwich in the Cup Winners' Cup away at Inter Milan. Rule Fox is taking a throw-in, right? So the ball is behind his head and a Norwich player is trotting over and says to him, no, this is my throw-in. I'll take it. But Fox throws the ball to him, as in does the throwing motion. The guy handles it on the field. The referee adjudges that the ball is in play and gives a handball and a free kick to Inter Milan. He could easily have just done, no. Yeah, I know what you're doing there. I know what you mean. You mean he's going to throw it in. This isn't a live play. Take it. But imagine that stuck with me. Imagine that stuck with me. And I can't tell you how many times playing games where referees, and like you said, often at the youth level, will just go, no, take that again. Take that again. They kind of take some ownership in and of the game. My brain is not melted about this in the same way everybody else's is.
I don't accept the comparison between youth level and Champions League quarterfinal. It can happen at any level. At youth level, I think we're more understanding of the fact that this is developmental. But in the Champions League quarterfinals, it's like these are professionals. These guys are paid millions. And is it a ridiculous mistake? Of course it is. But I don't think it's but it happened. Like I see in the NBA, stuff happens sometimes where there's confusion over an inbounds pass. Like, where a guy wants to take the inbounds pass, so he passes it in play to a guy and then he steps out to make the pass. You're out of bounds. And they call it every time. Like, I don't know. Maybe I have more of a black and white viewpoint of these things. I just see it as ball is in play, pass is made, player picks up ball. It's a penalty. I don't know. It's wild to me that a referee can kind of just choose the moments of when he deems the mistake to be, I think I know what happened there. And so I'm not going to give that. Like,
I'm fine with this. I like that autonomy by the ref to just like, I'm okay with it. So this is what Jimmy Carragher said. The referee used common sense. There was no advantage game by Arsenal. It's just a mix-up over who was taking the goal kick with no Bayern Munich player near the incident. You'd be sick if that went against you, especially in a Champions League quarterfinal. It's the same way I feel about Van Persie not hearing the whistle on the. Remember when he was sent off in the Nou Camp? He's in, the offside flag goes up and he boots the ball. And it's a second yellow card and he's off. That kind of over-officious nonsense. I like football being refereed with this kind of autonomy and common sense. That's the way I feel about it. I think if you're so kind of what's the word? If you're such a rules body, I can't. You're not for me.
Tuchel said afterwards, "For me, for all of us, he made a huge mistake not giving the handball. I know it is a crazy situation, but they put the ball down. He whistles, he gives the ball, and the defender takes the ball in his hand. What makes us really angry is the explanation on the field. He told our players that it is a kid's mistake, and he will not give a penalty like this in a quarterfinal. This is a horrible, horrible explanation. He's judging handballs. Kids' mistake, adults' mistake, whatever. We feel angry because it is a huge decision against
us. Not, it's just like, and this is a guy who has been thrown a bone by Arsenal in this game, generally speaking, because they've been abject. Who did they lose at the weekend? Heidenheim or whoever the hell. And it's just been a disaster. And Tuchel is just seizing on this. This is like, what is that in Office Space, Andrew? Did you put the cover sheet on the TPS reports? Yeah, I'm going to go. Need you to go ahead and do that. This is officiousness. This is office stuff. It's such a nothing. I cannot even believe we're talking about it.
My guess is
rightly left out of
Arsenal player. My guess is Arsenal players might have looked at the replay of that later on and kind of looked at each other and thought, got away with one there.
Nah, I think this is clutching at straws from Herr Tuchel.
The other huge moment of controversy came at the very end of the game, almost the last touch of the ball. A dangerous ball played in. Neuer comes rushing out for it as Bukayo Saka is rushing in towards it in the box. And there is clear contact made between the two.
It's brilliant from the ref.
The referee decides no penalty. He's right on top of it. And Arsenal were not happy about that. In the moment, I thought it was. Right away, I kind of recoiled a little bit and thought, oh my God, the game is going to end at the spot. They showed the replay. I was then not quite as sure because it does look like Bukayo Saka goes a little bit out of his way to ensure contact.
Hicks Neuer.
Yeah. Dale Johnson at ESPN FC said about it, it soon became evident from the replays that Saka initiated the contact by placing his right boot into the knee of the goalkeeper to give the impression he had been fouled. And then Dale Johnson, who has received so much abuse over the years on Twitter from rabid, angry fans who disagree with his stances. So he's always one step ahead. He could hear people saying, oh, but what about what happened over the weekend? And so his next paragraph was, this is not the same as a player accepting contact from a challenge, as was the case with Liverpool's Harvey Elliott.
There we go.
Penalty awarded against Manchester United defender Aaron Wan-Bissaka. And of course, in both situations, the decision of the referee was supported by the VAR.
Like, I have a problem with any football fan that can't see the difference between those two things. I have a serious problem.
Yeah, I think Saka made sure this happened. Elliot kind of just kept his legs sort of in the position that it was in. He didn't
and
really
also,
have to.
It's reckless from Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah.
Wan-Bissaka's like thrown himself in front of him.
Well, you could make a case that Neuer, I mean, look, you. I know you sometimes take issue with goalkeepers who rush out. Neuer's coming full speed there. It was very close. It's close enough that
don't
you could deem it reckless.
Don't step on my Domaruna stuff.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Yeah.
And then one other moment of controversy. Actually, Harry Kane got very close to a sending off himself. I believe on the broadcast, the commentators referred to it. If the orange card existed, this might have been one. He elbowed Gabriel.
Shock.
And
didn't he have previous with Gabriel? Didn't he do him down the sideline a few years ago and definitely should have been sent off?
Yeah, here they were reunited.
Like it was an outrageous that he wasn't.
And the problem, I think where this got close for Kane is that he does look back behind him to kind of see where Gabriel is. Now, it's hard to interpret what that means. Is that him measuring up, oh, there he is, let me get ready? Or is that just observing if there's anyone behind him so he knows how he has to try to play the ball? Does that matter? I don't know. It was close. It was close. In the end, it was a yellow. I think I'm okay with that. But I do acknowledge that he was probably a little bit fortunate. Those are the moments of controversy. This game was not short of them.
There's more moments of controversy. It's just not really refereeing stuff.
So as for the rest of the game, it really felt like Arsenal came out in full control of this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they got the early goal. Ben White plays in a really nice, you know, it's a simple ball, but it's a nice ball right into, he makes it as easy as possible for Bukayo Saka to take it and do what he does, being able to curl one around the keeper. And boy, the crowd, oh my gosh, that place was just so alive. And I want to go a little bit deeper on that. And I wonder what you make of this, JJ. The emotion of this match for Arsenal fans.
Yeah.
So because of Arsenal's Champions League failings under the latter stages of Wenger, I feel like Bayern Munich in particular kind of they've come to almost represent a certain era of failure for Arsenal.
Yes.
The three previous meetings between these two teams in the Champions League were all won by Bayern, and they were all won by a scoreline of 5-1. Like, that's Bayern's dos a cero against Arsenal. I remember years ago, we even made a joke about it after that had happened. Arsenal were in the Europa League, and they drew Östersunds. And I said something like Östersunds, of course, which is Swedish for Bayern Munich. Like, Bayern Munich had just become this bogey team for the end of Wenger. And so I do wonder if fans are aware of that kind of stuff. And for the people who were there and the people who support this club, this Arsenal facing this Bayern now, I feel like it's almost like Arsenal trying to send a message of like, we're not what you remember us to be. We're different now. And, you know, the crowd came in with just this incredible emotion that they scored that early goal. And I thought seeing the form that Arsenal had been in and seeing the form that Bayern had been in, I thought Arsenal were going to ride this to like a 3-0 at that point. I thought they were going to torch them.
Yeah, at that point, you felt like, well, look, this is the script, the cathartic moment as we bury the 5-1s. But it did not play out like that. And it's going to need something of a reset from Arteta, because in the last few weeks, what we've seen from Arsenal has been assured, has been competent, has been ruthless. And this game was not that.
Well, it all changed on one moment. I mean, Bayern's goal to equalize was so against the run of play. It was so shocking.
Well, Ben White should have put them 2-0 up, really.
Yeah. He had a chance where he was in on goal. But the goal for Bayern, I mean, it all looks harmless enough. Bayern just kind of lump a ball towards midfield, which Gabriel has total control and handle of. But for some reason, you know, here comes David Raya. He's charged 40 yards upfield. I don't know.
What's our favorite drop for that one? You know what it is.
For
somebody interjecting themselves in the middle of something.
Help me out.
Totally against plan.
And, you know, so like the problem here was, so Gabriel gets the ball and Harry Kane is pressing Gabriel. And ordinarily the simple thing there is, okay, back pass to our keeper and here we go again. But Raya's 40 yards upfield. He's not there to take a safe back pass. And so now Gabriel kind of he's got to improvise. Kane takes it off him. It's into Bayern. A nice ball is slid into Goretzka.
Sané's ball was sexy.
Yeah. Sané to start it to Goretzka. And then he slides one to Gnabry, who finishes past Raya. And just like that, the game, it's changed. Everything has changed. I mean, Arsenal felt like they were in such control. And, you know, mistakes like that, maybe you can survive it against your Brentfords or your Brightons, as Arsenal have beaten in recent weeks. But even in the form they're in, it's still Bayern. That's still Kane out there. That's still Goretzka. That's still Gnabry and Sané. Like, these are still world-class players.
That's right.
And just like that, it's a brand new game. And Bayern looked different after that.
They're still good enough if you give them an inch. And then Kivor completely gives Sané more than an inch. He gives him miles and miles and miles. And Saliba, right? Terrible positioning. Blatant penalty. And then you look up and you're 2-1 down. And you're like, how has this happened? And it definitely rattled Arsenal. And it just goes to show you that what's happening at Bayern Munich is not... I'm not saying there doesn't need to be changes in playing personnel or anything like that, but they still have the quality to hurt you if you open doors in the way that Arsenal did, and the feeling in the building changes. Trossard again proves a lot of... I don't know why I read so much of it online, but I did, of stats guys who when they went for they got Trossard as like this consolation prize because they couldn't land Mudrik last year.
Yeah.
And there was a sense of like, no, I'm not saying that the stats guys were not high on Mudrik, but they were not particularly high on Trossard. Some of the guys I read a lot, I'm sure there were ones that loved it. Another clever, canny boy from Edu and Arteta, and it proves his worth again. He's so calm with those finishes. For a guy who's not an out-and-out striker, Jesus' feet in the middle, the center, so good. Really, really good. And he slides it outside and Trossard does the rest. And I have no I won't say I have no idea. I think if Arsenal can, I do believe Arsenal can go to Germany and win, but this is not over.
Feels like we're steamrolling towards penalties.
You think so?
I could see a 1-1, let's go to pens. The Trossard thing is interesting. So he's up to 12 goals now in all competitions, and he's scored a lot of big ones. I mean, this one was obviously massive. He scored in against Liverpool to kind of put that one away in extra time. He scored against Porto in the first leg, or in the previous round of the knockout stage of the Champions League. I mean, you could even go back. I don't know what you think of this, but like, he scored 11 minutes into stoppage time against Man City in the Community Shield. And like you said, he was Arsenal's fallback option. Like, we can give credit, I guess, to Arteta, Edu, for making this move. But what was it their first choice? If they had their way, they probably would have had Mudryk.
Which would have been, as we now know, let's be kind, an incomplete player at best.
Yeah. And just look at, like, financially, in an era where PSR violations seem to be happening left and right, Arsenal had this guy for £27 million. Chelsea paid $89 million for Mudryk. I mean, if you're Arsenal, I think it's a happy accident. You take the win, regardless of how you got it. You fell into the situation and it was for the best. And look, maybe Mudryk would be different in a different situation under a different manager. Who knows? Maybe he'd be flying at Arsenal right now. But all we know is what we've seen in front of us. One player has struggled to find his footing, and the other is a hugely important piece, whether it's starting or off the bench. Trossard has come up big. And also, I'm glad you mentioned Gabriel Jesus, because, like we've said before, he kind of fancies himself as a creator even more so than a goal scorer. And he does it. Like, he does those things, and he made that goal happen, being able to kind of slide his way through the Bayern defense. Great game. What a fun game. And yeah, like you, I don't know. I tend to lean Bayern because it's tied and they're at home. And yeah, but would I be shocked if Arsenal won? No. Definitely not. I think it's going to go to penalties. That's how I see it. Just what a day. I was watching Bayern and Arsenal because we had sort of, like you said, we divvied up who would watch which game. And then we'd get caught up on the other ones. But I remember watching it being like, oh, I'm so glad I chose this one. And then I look up and I see it's like 3-2 over there. I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah, I know.
No. So Tuesday, I told everybody on the Monday pod, take off work on Tuesday, because what a joy this is going to be. And it delivered. It absolutely delivered. And then Wednesday, we haven't even gotten to Wednesday yet. That delivered as well. PSG and Barcelona. Oh, what a game. End to end. Lead changes. Goals. So much fun. I think you'd have to say this was Rafinha's biggest moment for Barcelona thus far. I mean, his top quality finishing, dangerous all throughout his 75 minutes out there. Boy, he was excellent. Barcelona looked really good in that first half. They got the goal from Rafinha, nearly scored prior to that when on the corner kick, when Lewandowski got a hold of one and Nuno Mendes cleared it off the line. Barca looked, it doesn't look like the Barcelona of old. You can't say that because they don't play the same way. It was funny. I think Luis Enrique said before the match that PSG are more Barcelona than Barcelona are Barcelona in terms of,
I mean,
the
there was
the
a lot, play. There was a lot of long balls in the first half, from Barcelona, but I don't know. I like that this version of Barca is growing on me somewhat. This hodgepodge of outstanding youth and then weird older player and then oddball signing from somewhere else is kind of, yeah, I like it. I mean, I don't want to go down into the financials. I'd worry about how sustainable or how they'll be able to keep the young players at the club. But like, for last night, that was so much fun. If we can just do goal by goal, because I think that's kind of interesting. I actually like this PSG team too. They are so much better than the Messi, Neymar, Mbappe version. They're so much more of a unit, it feels. And they do things in concert, like getting forward together and also defending together. And they don't, like, if you remember back to 2020.
I want to stop you for one sec. It's not that I disagree with you.
You're just stopping me.
Well, because I also heard, who was it that I heard? I was listening to Football Weekly podcast.
Right.
Max Rushton, that one. And one of the guys on there was saying the same thing. I really like this PSG team. They do this, this, and this.
Right.
I like them more, literally what you just said. And I was thinking it then. I'm kind of thinking it now. And it does bear mentioning, like, they did lose to a Barcelona team that we're not sure how good they are at home in Paris. Like, they lost the game, everybody.
Yeah, but we'll get to that. You can still like a team and they lose.
I like them too, but it's this. I think people hated what PSG came to represent. And so we kind of look at that.
If you want to talk about what they represent as an ownership, yeah, I still hate it. But, like, you know, it's a better, it's in terms of just the football on the field, it feels more integrated. It feels more, more together. That's fair comment. I think that makes sense.
But was it that was Mbappe's worst game? Like, to me,
but so what?
It'd be hard for
what
me
about
to watch
Vitinha?
PSG. No, I know. There were guys who played well, but, like, together and integrated, like, Mbappe has to be a part of that. Zero shots on target. Fewest touches of any outfield player for PSG in the game. Like, I just think people are going a little too far to praise PSG because we just disliked what they represented so much before.
I don't go into games thinking, well, I need the star player to be the star player. Like, look at Dembele's goal.
Sure. You know,
like, it just so... It's a good thing that Mbappe just doesn't run roughshod over teams like he did over Real Sociedad in the group stage. Like, there's nothing wrong with him having a night where he struggles, and still PSG get two goals.
And I thought that too. Rio Ferdinand said something. He made a comment after the game on TNT that I kind of felt that way about. He said the best player in the world, Kylian Mbappe, didn't perform today, and when he doesn't perform, then invariably PSG don't perform. And that probably wasn't true. I mean, PSG were in the game without Mbappe performing. Like you said, they had a lead in the second half.
The Araujo tackle and Vitinha was a massive moment. A massive moment. And Dembele hit the post after it. Then Christensen gets the winner. So it could have swung the other way quite easily. Yeah, you know, it's big moments like that. But I just want to talk about, like, if quickly go goal by goal, because I think it is kind of fun. So I've always had my doubts about Donnarumma. Because he's such a big lump of a man and he can make good, like, he can get full stretch and make really, really good saves. There's a sense that he is class. And I just see lots in his game where I'm like, was it Italy versus Ukraine in an international where I'm just watching, I'm like, this isn't good. A lot of the things he does aren't good. So on the first goal, I think this, I'm not going to blame him entirely for this. What a ball by Yamine Lamal outside of the boot. If Donnarumma doesn't come, Lewandowski's getting that first time. By the way, that build up, that opened up a whole other conversation. We didn't really talk in the City game about how well Antonio Rudiger handled Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
Handled him. Like, it was a brilliant performance, centre-back performance. And it reminds me of the League Two comment, which we haven't discussed from the weekend, about Roy Keane saying, if Haaland isn't scoring goals, then there's, like, he's not a great footballer. He's a great striker, great goal scorer, but he's a League Two footballer, which was probably definitely going too far. But there's something in it if you watch the way Lewandowski gets the ball, spins it out to Lamine Yamal, and then is on the end of it. You know, he's more involved in linking the play, and it would be an argument you'd want to make. Well, who do you rank higher? Both at their peak, we haven't seen Haaland speak, but both at their peak, Lewandowski or Haaland. Blah blah blah. I just thought that was an interesting thing. Anyway, back to Donnarumma. If you come there, Andrew, you got to get more of a hand on it, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Then there's the Dembele equalizer. I love it. I just absolutely love it. Like, the way he cuts and shifts that onto his other foot and then just buries it. Absolutely buries it. I thought, oh, absolute game on here.
That was the one moment where I would give Mbappe credit. Because that ball...
That ball before it runs out.
I was sure, as it was played to him, with where he was and where it felt like his momentum was shifting him towards... I just thought that ball was going to roll harmlessly over the line for a goal kick, but he has this ability. Did he get an assist on that? Because the ball was then deflected out. I wasn't sure.
I know. Maybe it's not the.
But he kept the phase of play alive. I thought that was just going to go out for a harmless goal kick. But he has this ability to just find top speed so quickly.
But, But like, it's so good. He saves the situation, and then eventually it leads to the goal. But like the best goal of the game, this is what I'm talking about, cohesion and everything. Not the best goal. One of the standout moments was Vitinha. Like right foot, left foot, cutting through after a lovely move, pops up in the channel and then pokes it past the Barca goalkeeper. Like it's a super goal, a really great goal. And then we come back to Donnarumma. The goal of the night for me was the Rafinha goal, Andrew.
Yes, I agree.
So let's talk about the good things about that. What a ball by Pedri.
Oh, man. Sees the run, reads it like exactly in the right timing, places it perfectly.
Now, Rafinha has a lot to do. And the way he does it is so economical and so sensual and beautiful. It's gorgeous. To slice that volley, it's exactly as he meant, but into the bottom corner on the run. Gorgeous goal. But, and this is why I don't think Donnarumma is like a top-order goalkeeper. You just can't have your keeper kicking it away like that. Barca are pressing PSG. Barca win the ball at the start of that phase. PSG recover it, and it goes back to Donnarumma. Your kicking has got to be better. Your team is under pressure. You can't just give the ball away like that. Now, people will argue, hey, he gives away the ball 40, 45 yards out the field. Doesn't matter. Barca are on it, and the next thing, the ball's in the back of the net. I mentioned the two other key moments then. So it's leveled up. The Araujo tackle on Vitinha, I think, is a brilliant bit of defending, because Vitinha is about to pulls the trigger and it's blocked. And Dembele hitting the post.
Yeah.
The winner, Andrew. Now, this is where I think me and you will diverge. It's too much of a free header from Christensen. He's just off the bench for, was it?
It's his first touch.
Amazing. Brilliant that he did that. If I have a 6'5", absolute unit of goalkeeper there, I want him to command that area a bit. Why is he not coming for that?
Yeah, we do not diverge. I have that in my notes.
Have you?
Well, I do.
Have you? Okay, because I was worried that
I have the same thing.
Yeah. Okay.
I said maybe he should have come for the third as well. A corner kick in the box. He's big. Get there.
He's big, yeah. I just and then he's kind of trying to react to it. It was much too late. It's too close in. It's a good header. I don't know how you feel about this one, but I wouldn't call it yet. Mbappe goes to the Nou Camp.
Yeah, Mbappe, his sheer presence is enough to never, like, you can never be comfortable, because you just don't know. He's capable of having a transcendent game that he just, like, takes it upon himself. Mm-hmm. So you just don't know, and it's only one goal. If I was leaning a certain way, I'd lean Barcelona, but I feel that this is still as much, even though there's a lead in this one, I still feel that this is kind of in toss-up territory, similar to the other two we've done so far.
Yeah.
I love it. Can I ask you a question about Barcelona? I find them so interesting.
Yeah.
I just find them, they're just fascinating to me. If Barcelona was a stock, are you buying, selling, or not touching?
I'm buying now.
Okay.
But I'm going to dump. What is that, pump and dump?
I think that, boy, you really do have a newborn.
Boy.
That's a baby term, isn't it?
Is it?
Like, sometimes after, like, if you're breastfeeding,
well,
if like a woman has like some drinks, sometimes they'll pump breast milk and then dump it. Like that can't be used.
You have t- on the brain, my friend. Pump and
this
dump.
This is a
first
common thing.
First, hit. Do the first thing on Google. Pump and dump is a form of securities fraud that involves artificially inflating the price of an owned stock through false.
Maybe I did just reveal something about myself. Who knows?
I listen. I don't blame you. Yeah, and I've completely used it in the wrong sense. I'm inflating their stock, and then maybe it's not the wrong sense. I like Barcelona, but there's this cloud of financials over my head.
There's just enough weirdness there. Because look, JJ, they've got six players ranging between the ages of 16 to 21 who have extraordinarily bright futures. Yamal and Cabarsi are 16 and 17.
Aye.
Gavi, Pedri, Fermín López in that midfield, Balde's hurt right now, but he's 20. You got a 20-year-old left back with 22 starts this season. I kind of just wish I knew who their next manager was going to be. Because, like, developmentally, these guys are at such an important age that I'd love to know who's, like, who's going to be looking after them.
Well, can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Based on, you know, what I've just watched in Champions League, Serge Gnabry just makes me always think of Tony Pulis. So get Pulis in. He'll look after them. He can spot a talent. Get him in. I've no idea, Andrew. I've no clue. And yeah. All I will say is that I am doing my bit for Barcelona. I am supporting their sponsors. I'll just give you my top three on repeat right now. Youngest Daughter by a band from Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
I know that.
They used to be called Daylight. They're called Super Heaven now. Kisses by Slowdive, X by Bicep, and F You Mean by Gunna. That's my top three.
Oh, interesting.
What's your top three?
I don't have a top three. I don't use Spotify. Yeah.
Apple Music guy? YouTube guy?
So, yeah. Kind of holding it down with Pandora.
And it's all Guster.
They're one of my channels. I have a few different channels that I frequent.
Okay.
Would I buy, sell, or I probably would leave it alone because I just don't know if they're going to have to sell some of those players. I don't know who the next manager is. I wouldn't sell. I definitely wouldn't sell, but buying, just, I don't know that you can. They're so volatile.
You'd be the subject of a UEFA investigation, owning stock in Tottenham, Real Madrid, and Barcelona.
Oh, man. The second leg should be awesome. And then finally, let's move on to the last one here. Atletico Madrid and Borussia Dortmund. JG, you know, Atleti have never lost a home knockout stage match under Diego Simeone. That's a wild statistic.
Really?
In the Champions League. Yeah, I forget the commentator, but I believe he said it at the start of the match, and they went ahead and won another one.
Dortmund were determined to make sure that record remained intact for the first half hour.
When playing it out from the back goes wrong. Who's more at fault there? Is it Kobel or Madsen?
Kobel can see the whole field. I mean, okay. Madsen makes a kind of attempts a round the corner pass in front of his own goal. But Kobel can see.
He's got to play it to his left. Madsen is surrounded. There's just a few too many Atleti players crowding the middle of the field. Kobel's got to play that ball out wide. Or lump it downfield. I mean, no one does that anymore. So if you play it out from the back, you don't do that. So I'm not going to get on him. But like
Andrew giving the thumbs up sign whenever anyone just belts it.
He's got a guy to his left. There's not really an Atletico Madrid player near him. Like you got to just, I think early in the game when the crowd is kind of at its like fervor, you just don't take that risk. It's not worth it. I mean, I don't know. I get the benefits of playing out from the back. I do. I understand why teams do it, but I still believe in time and place. And like third minute, it's just like, don't make like, so you're still playing it out from the back. If you play it out wide to your left, like you still have to, you know, you'll suck in the defenders and open up space in the mid. Like you can still do that. He didn't need to play it to that spot. I thought I almost felt bad for Madsen because he looked awful too. Yeah. But like, I felt the same way as you. Why are you doing that to your guy? Putting him in a position like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Kobel had a good game. He made two brilliant saves. Like top class saves.
No, he made up for it to a certain extent after that.
Kind of. But then Dortmund were rattled.
Yeah.
What about Schlotterbeck and Hummels?
So, Mats Hummels.
What's he doing?
He's a good player.
Oh, he is, yeah.
Which is why I feel that I can say this. Like, what the hell? What was wrong with him in this game?
Did he lose it in the lights? Why is he ending up behind? Wasn't he behind Schlotterbeck in that? And leaves this massive gap. Cannot get my head around that mistake. What I will say is that it's such good play by Griezmann. That little flicked, scooped pass to Lino, and then Lino's still got to control it. He controls it so smoothly, slides it under Kobel. 2-0. Oh, the tie was beginning to feel like it was over, but and it kind of was. Like, Dortmund had a much better second half.
Yeah.
Atleti did that annoying thing where they were like, okay, 2-0. And they retreated a little bit. Like, if you look at the highlights of the game. So I watched it live. But you go back and you look at the highlights. Like, there's two big chances for Atleti. in the second half. But outside of that, they fall back. And they have a couple of free.
One of those chances was probably the ultimate how did he not score moment of these set of fixtures. The Leno opportunity. How does he not score? That has to be a goal. It has to be 3-0. That's got to be the end of it. Yeah. And he doesn't. I mean, I don't know that it's his fault. It's an unbelievable save by Coble. But he just, I couldn't believe he didn't score there. And then it was almost right after that Sebastian Haller got his.
Well, Correa had a chance. Was that after the Haller goal? It was.
Yes. He took it right off Hummels. Again, Hummels had he had a horrible game. Yeah. And Correa took it right off of him, went in on goal. And I think maybe it was Hummels who scrambled back to do just enough that Correa couldn't get the kind of clean contact on it that he would have wanted. But Atleti, they had a couple really great chances to put this away. They couldn't. Dortmund took advantage of their moment. And, you know, and by the way, Dortmund hit the crossbar twice at the end of that game.
Yeah, Bynoe and Gittens and
Brandt. With almost the last touch of the ball.
I thought that was in. You have to give Terzic's substitutions credit. Like the second half, Gittens made a big difference coming in. Julian Brandt made a big difference coming in as well. Like, so, again, I'm not fully in on, like, I know Atletico were so strong in that first half, and then they kind of stopped the pressing that they were doing. They pulled back. They played much deeper. It's the phrase. It's going to be the title of the pod, In the Balance. Like, so, this one is another one in the balance. And would I be wrong to kind of have a little feeling for Dortmund that they'll do it back in the Westfalenstadion?
So let me ask you this question. I'll give you my answer. I'll be curious for yours. These four, they're all, to varying degrees, they're all, like you said, in the balance going into the second leg. My ranking from which games I'm most confident in a winner to least confident, I would say I'm most confident in Atletico Madrid.
Huh.
Number two, I think I'm then most confident in, I don't know that I want to say, I'll say Manchester City going home. Next, I would say Barcelona. And the one I'm least confident in, I don't know who's going to win Bayern Arsenal. I genuinely don't know.
I'd say I'm confident City go through.
That's your number one?
Yep.
What a shot at Real Madrid.
I know. But I just am. I'm confident Barcelona go through.
Okay.
The other two, I don't know.
Should be awesome.
If Arsenal should go through, can Tuchel get another performance out of a team he's not got performances out of? I don't know. I think Arsenal go through in that one, and I'm going to say Dortmund go through in the other. But I have no level of confidence on those two games.
Oh, man, it's going to be so good. Please, 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 please let the second legs be like this.
The second legs is they have their, usually the first legs are dull, and the second legs by their very nature have a drama of their own, like because of the knockout. Like, they mightn't be great games, but someone has to go through, and that keeps us alive and keeps us interested. So I'm not worried about the second legs. I'll be glued to my sofa yet again.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go ahead. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. Still a few things to do. A couple the U.S. Women, She Believes Cup, CONCACAF Champions Cup stuff. Still a few things here on Caught Offside. Don't go anywhere.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, I wanted to mention this to you because we had our whole Rob Reiner, JFK, it's a conspiracy and that's just how it is conversation a couple weeks ago. And so, like, with that, you mentioned when we were talking about it that you even go further than that and you think RFK, there's something not right there as well. And so, you know, I've always wondered about that too. There's, you know, I believe in coincidences, but to a point. And I don't know, something about these two brothers and what they represented, both being assassinated. There's something about it. So I looked for a similar, like I wanted to see, are there RFK assassination podcasts that do this, that do a similar kind of deep dive as to what we listen to about JFK. And so I found one. It's called, what is it? I think it's called the RFK Tapes from 2021. And there's like a lot of recordings with the police interviewing Sirhan Sirhan. It's a lot. And guys who have kind of made it their professional lives to look into this. And I have one left, but the meat of it, I've kind of bit through. And I would say now I am not confident that there was a conspiracy with that one. Okay. I came away from the JFK one being like, done. That's what it was. This one, I wouldn't say that.
So I mentioned Ezra Edelman's podcast is a very good one about America, American history, American culture. I would say Bobby Kennedy for President on Netflix is in the same vein. It's very, very good. In the final episode, because they deal with his kind of turn from this rich kid from Massachusetts to the attorney general to the candidate for president. They plot that and his thinking and how he wanted to work for the American poor. But the final episode is about the shooting. And there's doubt in that episode. There's definite doubt that there was more than one shooter.
Yeah, there are things that I can see why it continues to kind of give oxygen to the idea that there was one, but from like a certainty, like I came away certain with the JFK one. I'm not near certainty.
Yeah, on this one. I have no certainty in any of it, but I'm kind of an RFK guy. Like I would, if I was to list maybe like people I'd love to have a living or dead, have a banquet with
it. A banquet?
Why am I saying banquet? Why couldn't I just
want to take him to a dance and
dinner,
like, ball?
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that's interesting. Very, very interesting. Oh, one Thank thing you. For you that, I don't think I'll listen to that podcast, by the way.
I haven't really sold it.
No, you haven't.
But I'm not looking to. I'm just telling you what my takeaway was.
I can sell something to you. J.J. Watt versus Roy Keane. Stick to football.
Is it good? I saw he was a guest on that.
The clips look good.
You haven't listened?
I haven't listened yet. But, he accuses Keane of smoking weed for his comments on Haaland. But there seems like good banter back. There always is on that show. Keane is... His personality is something else. Like, I honestly think that he could do stand up.
Wow.
Yeah, he really could. The outtakes are the best part of that podcast when they're just chatting casually. So listen to listen to the outtakes of it. Okay. But JJ Watt is on, and Keane's a massive NFL fan.
So oh, yeah? It's
yeah, huge NFL guy. He was there at Aaron Rodgers' first game.
The Jets? That one?
Yeah, he was over.
Towards Achilles?
One. Yeah, and he's been to two Super Bowls in the last 4 years, I think.
So. Wow. Yeah. How about that?
He's a big guy for the old NFL, but worth the listen as well. They obviously beat us out to number one podcast in the sports podcast award, soccer podcast awards. So
yeah, no shame in second place to that podcast. They do fine work. Let's see, JJ. A few things here before we get out on this Thursday afternoon. The U.S. women, another trophy under Twyla Kilgore in her very short time in charge. Two trophies, not so bad on the resume. As they win the She Believes Cup, they beat Canada 2-2, and then they defeat them on penalties. Boy, Canada have just two horrifying losses to the U.S. women in the last month. The waterlogged one, and then this one, both of them brutal. And once again, the U.S. give up the first goal. A little bit of a concerning trend that continues to happen, but a not concerning trend is that this team still does kind of have this gene where they can fight back. Huge night for Sophia Smith, scored twice for the U.S. And, you know, it's really interesting. Suddenly, maybe we knew this, but because of injuries, it kind of skewed our perspective a little bit. But suddenly you look up and you start thinking about the U.S. women's attack at the Olympics and just moving forward in general. And you're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sophia Smith looks great. You know, Alex Morgan, who I kind of felt was in some ways almost being phased out, thought she played really well in this game. Could have scored early, but her shot was blocked from point blank range. You know, so she's still very good. Jaden Shaw, my God. I mean, now she's kind of a hybrid attacking midfielder, forward, but whatever. She's scoring. She didn't score in this game. Her streak ended, but she's scoring goals every week. Trinity Rodman, Mal Swanson back and playing well. Katerina Macario back. Like, Alyssa Thompson was supposed to be like one of the next big things. It feels like she's been pushed completely into the background. And this is all also with Mia Fishel and Midge Purse. They're both out with torn ACLs, so I'm not even really factoring that in. I mean, this is, have we seen depth up front for this team, like, to this level before? I know they've always had good players, but God, they're like seven deep.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And then, so the big thing for the incoming manager is how she manages, you know, rotates that, finds her system. I still think, why do I just feel like, you know, there's going to be a cleaning of house still to come? This is just, it all feels like phony war to me. Do you feel that way too? I can't read anything into any of this.
Steph Yang has a good article at The Athletic where she kind of talks about that. And she has quotes from various players on this team from over the last few months where they're all just like, yeah, this is a period of huge uncertainty.
Right.
They all do feel that way because, like, I forget who it was. Was it Sam Coffey? One of them was kind of like, or Trinity Rodman. I don't know. They were talking about how, like, the messages from Emma Hayes are kind of like few and far between. They just don't know yet what it's going to be when Emma Hayes gets there. And I know Emma Hayes and Twyla Kilgore, they've been in communication. So, you know, I'm sure some of this is Twyla Kilgore, but some of it is also what Emma Hayes wants to see. But yeah, uncertainty was the word. And so now finally you'll start to get a better sense of what Emma Hayes wants to do and what her preferred personnel is. You're right. Right. From the World Cup disaster up till this moment, it's hard to know what is real and what's not, but I can look at something like Jaden Shaw and, you know, her emergence, like, that's real. That's real. Sophia right. Smith continuing her trajectory, scoring 12, like, that's real. Swanson and Macario back. Those things, like, you can say phony war about results and things, but from a personnel perspective, that these are the players that they have at their disposal are top quality. And the real challenge for Emma Hayes is going to be trying to parse through what a preferred 11 is when you've got so many players of that level that you can go to. I don't know. I guess it's a good problem to have, but it could still be a problem.
Yeah. But I'm just fascinated by Emma Hayes' comments about the creativity and you know, like, yeah. You know, these are all finishers. Where does she get that creativity? Is that, or does she see it in?
Well,
in
Rose Lavelle, I think.
That's the one I'm curious about. Because I do feel sometimes her skills, her ability, we saw it in the NWSL final. It's all kind of, it's almost virtuoso stuff. I'm not saying she doesn't bring other players in. She does. But, you know, harnessing that and putting it into the mix again and keeping her fit too is huge. Yeah, I have no strong feeling on what I've seen between the Women's Gold Cup, between the She Believes Cup. I just, part of me is just like, I want a friendly with Portugal right now. Full strength, I want to see Portugal versus the US. Because that's the game that still sticks in my mind from the World Cup that haunts me, that makes me think, wow, we are way off it.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know, feels like they're headed in the right direction, and with the right coaching that can instill a system, there's a lot of good talent here. But until we see it in action, yeah, I suppose there is still this kind of lingering question in the background of just like, how real is it? But props to them. Two trophies in the last month. That's all you can do, is, you know, for whatever we think of the uncertain state of the team right now, they are still winning trophies, and that's a good thing. And hopefully it continues through the summer at the Olympics. CONCACAF Champions Cup. Oh boy. Let's start with the good. The Columbus Crew. That's an all-time win right there for an MLS side in this competition. Going to that place against Tigres and coming out of there with a win on penalties. That might be as quiet as I've heard a stadium get, because it wasn't really like, even there wasn't really an away section of a ton of Columbus.
Apparently it wasn't even full for the game, that there was a sense that,
really?
This, like, I saw someone say it wasn't full.
Look, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it was. Maybe by kickoff it was.
That's a great win though.
It's unbelievable. I think as much as it's a great win for Columbus on the game, I think Tigres will be like, oh, this is an all-time loss for them, I think.
There was an element of wastefulness by Tigres in this match that felt very Liverpool United from over the weekend. I mean, and you know who my big winner is in this game?
Diego Rossi, Patrick Schulte.
Patrick Schulte, because the first important moment from this game, very early on, he's in this hostile environment at Tigres, and what does he do? I mean, he's caught right in front of goal. He tries to do, who was it, JJ? Like a Stefan Ortega.
He tried to do it, but he tried to do it with a much more awkward feat and much more readable.
I mean, right away, like, it's so funny that it happened, because after the Ortega thing, you asked the question on the show, who would you not want to see doing that? And I didn't really have an answer right away. Now I do. I have one now, a week later. I watched Patrick Schulte try to do it, and he couldn't, and it was in a terrible spot to try it. Gignac pounces, and it's 1-0, and it's 1-0 in embarrassing fashion for Columbus, and it feels, it's an uh-oh moment. Oh, boy. Oh, you can't be giving up goals to them like that in that place. It's hard enough as it is. That was just, oh, God. And, you know, Patrick Schulte is my big winner here, because that's a moment that could crush someone.
Thank you.
You've done that in the first 3 minutes of a hugely important game, and you still got 87 more to go. Oh, God. Oh, God. That could ruin your night, and he did not let that happen. He was awesome afterwards. Now, look, Tigres were still wasteful in that they had two goals taken off the board for offsides. So, like, Tigres still controlled so much of the game, but Schulte, he made an unbelievable save later on to keep this thing tight. Obviously, I mean, Columbus scored, we'll get to that, but this game goes to penalties. He saves penalties for them. It was like he just had this determination after that initial mistake of, I am going to spend the rest of this night making up for the mistake I just made. And he did. And I love that. I love to see a guy who can do that.
That's great. It's great mental strength. It's got to be the loneliest position in the world when you do make those kind of errors. Like, you must feel such... And we often see goalkeepers try too much, you know, start rushing out their goal, panic. He didn't really do any of that. I wonder if we're changing, though, Andrew, that because we're asking so much of goalkeepers now, that these mistakes are kind of... They're more used to them.
You know, ones like that, though.
Yeah, maybe not.
I don't know. You don't see that every week, although we're going to get to the Inter-Miami game. And then
oh, for God's sake.
Have another one.
By the way, it's only last month Schulte was linked with Arsenal. The rumors were that he would end up at Arsenal, which I kind of don't want, considering Matt Turner's stint there.
Yeah.
But Schulte's younger and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I wouldn't hate him making a move to Europe. No offense to Columbus.
No.
I don't mean to take him out of Columbus, but
no, I wouldn't.
I do think he's of that quality that he can do that.
In terms of a crucial player to to the crew. Diego Rossi must be top of that list.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've got a few of them, and it was nice to see Cucho back as he kind of started the move that led to the Rossi goal. But yeah, Rossi is certainly, he's certainly important. And it's fitting that he scored the equalizer. Kind of came on a weird move. I mean, like I said, Cucho played the ball in, and then it's a heavy touch that from a Columbus player that Rossi is just happens to be the closest yeah. to it that he can make up for that. And it's a good finish. And yeah, I mean, I don't know that it felt like that was coming. It felt like Tigres were, you know, kind of in control of this one.
That's why, like, if you watch it, that game felt like it was only going one way all through the game. And you're like, Jesus, they've got it to penalties now. It could, yeah, it's, I think as much as Columbus will rank this as a great away victory, my God, Tigres.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one that killed. And like I said, the silence was deafening when that one ended. That was kind of what stood out to me. Joseph Lowry posted this about kind of what this meant for the Columbus Crew. He said, this Columbus Crew team is special, man. First MLS team to advance in Mexico after not winning the first leg at home. Kept themselves alive even with the Cucho chaos. Truly went toe-to-toe with Tigres home and away. It continues this great moment that Columbus are in, building off of their MLS Cup win, and we'll see how far they can take it. Their next match will not be easy because it's going to be against Monterrey, who just thoroughly dispatched of Inter Miami. 3-1 was the final in the second leg, 5-2 overall. And, you know, we just talked about Patrick Schulte's early mistake. Drake Callender, I mean, he made a similar one. Just, I don't know what to say about a mistake like that other than, well, at least I'm glad it was Brandon Vasquez that scored it. Like, I don't know. Like,
good for you.
It was so awful. It's one thing to kind of make a mistake where a ball gets, you know, taken off you the way it did with Schulte, but this, like, does he not see Vasquez? He's 3 feet in front of him. I don't know. I can't get in his head. I don't know what he was thinking, what he was trying to do there. Obviously, he knew what he did was disastrous. I don't know. I can't figure it out. And it was awful. They never recovered.
It wasn't a great evening for those who look to kind of break their way into the top two of the U.S. men's national team rankings for goalkeeping. You know, it's, but like Monterrey went on then and just dispatched them.
Oh my God. The goal from Betarame was spectacular. Monterrey's third, another totally unforced error from Inter Miami, a giveaway in the back and Monterrey, they just pounce. Jesus Gallardo with a really strong header to finish it off. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Look, I think Inter Miami are a great team. I think they were my pick to win MLS Cup, but how could you look at these two legs and say that, you know, the better team lost? You can't. Monterrey clearly looked like the better team, you know, without Messi in the first leg, whatever, but Messi was there for this one. And I was reading, JJ, about the security leading up to this one, all the way from like the airport, all the way through the city, around the hotel, at the stadium. Unbelievable security, partially because people are obsessed with Messi, partially because it feels like this almost turned into an unexpected rivalry. With, you know, after the first leg, Messi didn't play, but there were reports that he tried to get back into the Monterrey locker room. He was really mad about certain developments from over the course of the game. Inter Miami, I think, were fined an undisclosed amount for that. And there was a real, you know, Messi is cheered everywhere he goes, no matter what. I don't think that was the case here. It sounded like that crowd wanted blood. They were not impressed by Messi. They were kind of out to rattle him at every turn. It was, in some ways, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, a team with Messi and Suarez up front, albeit the current version of Messi and Suarez, got one shot on target in this game.
Yeah, they were terrible.
Yeah. I would also think, like, wasn't it Monterrey where there was the drug cartel violence there in back in September was some serious. September. Here's the BBC. Monterrey gangs, bodies dumped in Mexico's business capital. The mutilated remains of up to a dozen people were found strewn across the northern Mexican city of Monterrey on Tuesday. Yeah, that's from the 27th of September 2023. So I guess, you know, you're just not going to take any chances going in there.
I think I was reading at ESPN FC, security for the match is usually 800, consists of 800 people, personnel. It was nearly doubled for this, up to 1,400.
Wow.
I mean, they took this, by the way, very seriously.
Estadio BBVA must be the one of the, first of all, it's a beautiful stadium.
Oh, it really is. Yeah.
Pablo Maurer took pictures of the concourses as well. It's gorgeous. And then the backdrop of the mountains, it's probably one of the most picturesque in.
It looks like soccer heaven.
It does. It looks absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
But it wasn't soccer heaven for Inter Miami.
Oh, no, 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 no. It was, well, look, I guess Apple's pleased.
Apple. Delighted.
Don't have to worry about
that. High fives
anymore.
From some weenie executives now. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, but this is, in terms of the Messi project, Busquets, Jordi Alba, 2 yellows in 4 minutes. I mean,
so
he lost
angry.
His mind.
He looked every bit the frustrated, kind of tired old professional there. He was incensed, screaming in the referee's face. He honestly looked like he wanted it.
But huge failure.
Massive failure. And again,
project here.
My question marks about this project continue anyway, but you might be right that they should still be front and center in our thoughts for MLS Cup.
Well, we'll see. Like you, I mean, I know you've brought up, it might be hard to know what Inter Miami is until after all the international stuff from over the summer.
I think so.
We'll see. Hope, you know, you just want guys to stay healthy so you get the proper version of whatever they're going to be. But this, huge failure. Not a good night for Inter Miami, but Columbus holding it down for MLS. That's a great win for them, and they'll now face Monterrey. I believe it's Monterrey Columbus in the semifinal. One other, I just have one final thing here. One MLS note. Yeah. So JJ, I know sometimes we have a couple listeners who are diehard Minnesota United FC fans that are always kind of pushing us.
The loons.
Get some loons in there. And they're right. They're right too. Although I don't know that this is the kind of stuff that they're excited to hear about. Emmanuel Reynoso. So I'm just going to read this headline to you from Goal.
I don't know of this, so you're catching me off guard.
Here's the headline that I saw. Minnesota United superstar Emmanuel Reynoso goes AWOL in Argentina, skips green card appointment, and abandons club for second straight season.
What in the God?
The MLS club had set aside time during the March FIFA international break for their two-time All-Star to obtain his green card. He began the immigration process after departing Minnesota on March 18th, but wavered from the path while in Argentina. He skipped a club-issued green card appointment in late March that would have allowed him to return for their match against the Philadelphia Union. This is the second straight season where Reynoso has gone AWOL at the beginning of the campaign. The Argentine missed the first 40% of the MLS campaign in 2023 after being suspended by MLS for failing to report to preseason training camp. He also missed the first week of preseason this year, but said that absence was excused after just having found out that his girlfriend was pregnant. So he was, I guess, given some time to help figure out, you know, whatever situation needed to be figured out there. Look, I don't know what's going to happen here. I know that.
Well, let me tell you, having dealt with USCIS, US Customs and Immigration Services, he better have a good reason for missing his appointment. And he probably needs to let them know very, very quickly.
That's probably the biggest part of it. My uncertainty over what's going to happen here, I was thinking more about from Minnesota's perspective, like this guy's a designated player. I believe he makes a little over $2 million a year. I don't know how the players feel about it. Maybe they understand his situation. Maybe they're privy to more than what we know. Although based on the club statement, which I'll read in a sec, I don't get that feeling. But like, I don't know, man. I could see the fact that this happened last year and now it's happening again this year, it becomes a little harder to excuse. I could see something like that on those wages for that guy when other guys are making not even a sniff of that. Like, yeah. I could see something like this breeding a lot of resentment in that room. And I don't know how much more of it they can take. And it's tough because he's a great player when he's right. But if you're not reliable, then what good are you?
No.
Here was the statement, by the way. Emmanuel Reynoso did not attend his recent green card appointment, and he remains in Argentina. Minnesota Chief Soccer Officer Khalid El Ahmed said in a statement Tuesday, "We do not have an updated timeline for his return and have no additional comment at this time. Our entire focus is on the players and staff who are here." Not too warm and fuzzy. If it was something serious, you know, there'd be a line in there of, you know, this is a personal matter. Our thoughts are with Emmanuel at this time. You know, we will support him when he returns, whatever. None of that. Our focus is on the guys who are here. I don't know how this ends, but I'm guessing that there are a lot of angry people in that club right now, players all the way up through front office and ownership.
What a baptism of fire for Eric Ramsey.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Jeez. Not a good situation there.
No, and he's 28. I mean, 28-year-old player like him earning $2 million. It's a big lot of money to be messing around with in this fashion.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Don't know, but certainly thought it was worth mentioning because he's a big-time player and because I know we have Minnesota United fans that want to hear us talk about their club, even if that is not the fashion that they were hoping for. You got anything else, JJ?
No, I'm wiped, man.
Wiped. Another huge weekend, of course, of hot soccer action coming up.
Don't say it like that.
No, super hot soccer action. We'll be back early next week to cover all of it. The title race, relegation race, unknown Everton point deductions that are still on the horizon that we don't even know about. All of these things. JJ, that's all I got. That's all I got, my friend. Hey, to you I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.